Welcome to the Strange Motion Way podcast. I am Tim Strange, along with my hostess with the mostest,
Carrie Strange.
We're going to be bringing you a lot of interviews with custom people, hot rodders, street rodders, some drag racers. Yes, we're going to include some BMX and
cats.
Our other co-hosts are Turbo and Axel.
All right, Tim, let's get it started.
Bill Starbird is our interview today. If you're into custom cars, you know the name, and your mind instantly thinks of Bubble Top Creations. Known as the King of Bubble Tops, he ran car shows all over the country, even ran the ISCA and the Grand National Roadster Show for quite a few years. And he started the National Rod and Custom Car Hall of Fame Museum and the Hall of Fame, and he's done many, many more things, along with his name was mentioned in the movie American Graffiti. So welcome today, Daryl Starbird. How are you doing?
Well, hey, great. That's a great introduction. You covered everything, it sounds like, Jim. Thank you.
So are we done? Is that it? Or we want? There's more stories.
Well, just quit. You told my whole story right there.
Well, that was abbreviated. Of course, you've got a book out on your career and your history that is actually absolutely amazing that I had it. So I've been through it a little bit. And, of course, I'm lucky to honored to call you a friend. We're sitting here in your living room. I've stayed here and helped you in the shop many times. So it's we're going to start doing this podcast. So we figured we just will start with the king of the bubble tops right from the start here. So first off, how young are you today and where are you originally from?
Well, you know, actually, I'm from Grove, Oklahoma right now, or real close to Grove, Oklahoma. I actually called Bernice, which is a real small little town, suburb of Grove, Oklahoma, right outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I originally was born in Topeka, Kansas, and did my shop for 40-some years in Wichita, Kansas, where my parents both worked at Boeing Airplane Company. During the war, I'm talking about the Second World War in 41, and I was raised in Wichita primarily. We moved there when I was in third grade to Wichita. My dad went to work for Boeing, of course, and mother later. I was in a family of four kids and two parents, I hope, and four of us, there was two boys and two girls, and I had a younger brother and an older brother and an older sister. They had the job of taking care of me a lot, my sister especially, when I was younger, because my mother always worked. She was a working mother during the war, and she's kind of like Rosie the Riveter. She kind of did everything during the war. Most mothers went to work, believe it or not, many of them. And that had never worked except in small towns, and they came from all over. And we lived in a government development, which was a development area in Wichita close to the plant that were all duplexes or fourplexes. So it was kind of a wartime, and we lived there for about 4 years in Wichita in those developments. But we were actually from Topeka, Kansas, and our whole family was from the Topeka area. My grandfather had a large farm when they were growing up, and so they were actually from a farm community, and my parents, that is. I never actually lived on a farm. I spent a lot of time on the farm, my grandparents and my cousins and so forth. So I always felt good about knowing country traditions and and what happens when you are an actual farmer. I used to spend summers with them, rounding up the cattle and milking cattle, and just being a normal farmer during the summer. But that ended when I was about in the seventh grade, I suppose. But when I moved to Wichita, Kansas, in the third grade, and I actually had a paper out with my older brother when I was 12 or 8 years old. And believe it or not, the Wichita Eagle in them days, which was a big newspaper in Wichita, had a morning and an evening route. So we had to get
twice a day papers.
Yeah, that's a newspaper. And so I went to work carrying newspapers when I was 8 years old, actually. 9 years old. first year we didn't do that. And by the time I was in the 10th grade on, or I mean 10 years old on, I had a full-time job of some kind till today, really. I've been employed doing something ever since, usually self-employed, mm-hmm. like newspapers. And I caddied when I was young. Funny thing about caddying them days was we didn't have anything to ride.
Golf caddy?
We walked, yeah.
Yeah.
And a bag would drag on the ground for me because I was only about to stall for about, you know, less than 4 foot tall. And my big brother, on the other hand, I would carry singles, which was one bag on your back. You didn't have a cart. And he would carry doubles, two bags. Well, they felt sorry for me, the guy that was actually the head of the whole Wichita Country Club, which was a big country club in Wichita. All the rich people played golf there, and it was kind of a private type thing, you know. So we caddied for them, but I usually caddied for women, and because I was so young and small, I would carry 9 holes, which most women played. And my big brother, he'd carry 18 with two bags. He's 6 years older than I was. So he's a little bit older. Mm-hmm. He was like 14 or something when he was carrying. But we caddied for a couple years during summers. And then I got to know both of us got to know the pro there, which is the guy that handles all the caddies and, you know, determines who's going to caddy what and so forth. There's about a dozen of us caddies. But by the second year, we were hard workers. We always wanted to work and worked hard, and my brother the same way. So anyway, we got a contract with a pro to wade all the lakes for the golf balls, 18 holes. So every morning we'd have to get up at 3 o'clock before anybody started playing golf. Of course, it took us a couple hours to do the lakes, you know. And so we'd get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, every morning during summer, and wade lakes. Well, the lakes would come up to just to my chin about. Sometimes just a little bit over. I'd kind of tiptoe around a little bit in the lakes. Well, we felt your balls with your feet, you know, when you're walking along. And me, I would walk along. I would have to duck down and get the ball. Well, my big brother, he was just barely tall enough he could reach down most of them and get the balls without getting under the water. But me, I had to get my face under the water every time. Well, we did that for 2 years. And believe it or not, we got 25 cents a ball. Everyone we turned in. And that was big money in them days.
Yeah.
25 cents meant a lot because you'd caddy for a dollar. He would 18 carrying doubles, to give you an idea. You know, I got 50 cents for carrying a single.
So did you ever take a bucket of balls when nobody wasn't looking and throw them out in the water so you get 25 cents?
I never thought of that. I wasn't that smart in days, I guess. Now, the only guy that would say that would be Tim. No. That's a good idea, though. If I had to do it today, I would probably throw all the balls in the water.
They'd probably catch on to that pretty quick. So.
Yeah, all right. But anyway, that was big money in them days, and I bought my first bicycle. When I actually bought my first bicycle when I was throwing newspapers, and it was a truck bike. And a truck bike had a big basket on the front and a little wheel, so you could carry your papers in the basket. And we would carry one street, one side of the street, and my brother would carry the other side of the street, or when it was one street only, or one side only, like I had. The first street I did on the paper out when I was a little kid was carry the side against the railroad. So it was only one-sided, and it was 4 blocks long from one street to the other street that we went to. Well, I was small, and the railroad tracks and houses there were pretty pretty bad. I mean, you know, the people were poor. And I only had like in that whole four blocks, like maybe a dozen customers. The rest of them couldn't afford to take papers. Lots of times I'd throw papers to some of them anyway, just because I felt sorry for them. So some of them were older. But anyway, it's usually dark when I got there. Well, I'd run the whole four blocks because I was scared to death. And then the next street over, my brother carried one side, and then I carried that side next and so forth down the road. And we had four blocks to do this way. Mm-hmm. And they were four blocks long. Yeah. So we carried 200 papers, actually, total, every day and twice a day. I'd have to get out of school at 3 and go get two newspapers and throw them. So they got them by 5 o'clock, everybody, you know, or 6 o'clock at the latest.
It's crazy to think about two papers a day when there's a lot of newspapers that don't even exist now. A lot of people, they just get their news on the computer or on their phone or something. There's, you know, a lot of newspapers don't print anymore. Or back home, the newspapers in Galesburg used to print. You know, that was a big deal, the Galesburg paper, and now it's like 10 pages thick or something like that. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we were actually self-employed because we had to collect our own money. And whatever we made, some people wouldn't pay you, of course. Some of them pay once every 6 months, if you're lucky. So it was always, you're in business for yourself, mm-hmm. in essence, because you paid for the papers when they delivered them. Yeah. If you had 6 extra, you just paid for them anyway. I mean, you know, they charge you for whatever they dropped. And they would insist on you carrying 6 extra ones, so you always paid for 6 more than you needed. But anyway, we did that for several years. I don't remember exactly, 4 or 5 years, carried papers. Probably till I was even moved back to Wichita, which had been in 46. So in that period, I threw papers so far. But anyway, when I got to Wichita, I had a paper route also, but at least then I threw it from a motor scooter. Mm-hmm. I'd bought a motor scooter. And I could throw the papers from the motor scooter. But I was by myself, of course. Then,
What was the make of the motorcycle? What was it? You remember?
Cushman motor scooter.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Cushman, yeah. In fact,
I didn't think you'd have a Harley delivering papers.
No. I never owned a motorcycle.
Yeah.
I owned a Cushman motor scooter. I bought 2 of them, actually. And believe it or not, I paid for every one of these myself. My folks never bought me a bicycle, never bought me nothing. Everything I had, I earned myself and paid for it.
How old were you then when you had the Cushman?
Cushman, I bought it when I turned 16.
Okay.
Or 14. 14, you could carry papers or ride a Cushman at 14 and get a license. But you couldn't get a driver's license until 16 for a car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when did you get your first car?
My first car was in when I turned 16, which would have been 33, 49, I guess. Well, that's not right. Anyway, when I turned 16, I can't even figure out how old I am. I'm so darn old, I've forgotten. But anyway, I did get my first car when I was 16. And when I did, I sold my scooter to my little brother because it was still a nice Cushman, you know. Well, I had a couple wrecks on it in the ice, you know, on the roads, sliding down the road and on the ice carrying papers with it originally. And my little brother, on the other hand, I sold him my Cushman motor scooter when I turned 16.
What was your car you first bought? What was the first car?
My first car was a 41 Ford convertible.
Oh, cool.
And anyway, he got killed the day he went to get his driver's license.
Oh, man.
On the motor scooter, 14. A guy ran a stop sign right downtown Wichita.
Oh, man.
Ran a stop sign in front of him. He hit the side of the car with my scooter. First day he bought it from me. And he went through the backside glass, broke his neck, and the guy was on behind him because those scooters had a skirt on the back of them, you know. And he and my best friend had ridden downtown with me. He went over the top of the car when they hit it, and he got a little bit bunged up.
Okay, we're going to take a break right here. We had a guest pop into Daryl's house.
And we actually have almost 3 hours of an interview with Daryl, so we're going to be breaking this up in sections.
We hope you like what you heard and you tuned in next time.
For the Strange Motion Way podcast.
I'm Carrie.
I'm Tim.
Talk to you soon.